I just need a quick, really, honestly, a sentence each. I think I haven't heard from Stephen and from John on this. Is that right?
Right, I'll be as quick as I can, Mark. Jenny, the logical outworkings of voting against the budget is absolutely that you would leave the government. No, if you cannot support something as fundamental as a budget, you should not be in government. The core of our problem, as I said both at the outset, is we have people doing a bit of government and opposition all together. You need to be clearly defined. You're either in the government or you're in opposition. Don't do a bit of both and don't do it bad. And that comes back to Pete's point about confidence and Paul's perception of young people and people who have been interested in politics. The outside factors I mentioned at the start, the Scottish referendum has a big impact, but we are not at the races been ready to accept tax varying powers or even that debate about what a new constitutional arrangement might look like for governing the United Kingdom. I do have sympathy for what Danny said, right, that, and I'll quote, he mightn't want to be referred to him as my friend, Stephen Agnew, the leader of the Green Party. We are in a politics that good things are good and bad things are bad. We don't, the tough sort of decisions that Danny is talking about, nobody wants to face them. And because you don't have that collective cabinet government, everybody's on their own when it comes to, if Danny has to reduce the numbers of people that get access to free bus passes, if he ups it to the pension age, everybody's against him, even his cabinet colleagues. If Stephen has to do something like increase tuition fees, everybody's against him. Unless you have a collective government. And that's why I make the point that our fundamental point is that we don't have power sharing. We've shared out power. We need to get power sharing and collective cabinet government on an agreed agenda at the start of an assembly term, and that the government's putting a shoulder to the wheel on all the big issues, popular and unpopular.
Stephen? We can agree on how you can have a different and better form of government. The question has to be how you can get there. I would far rather that I'm in a situation of trying to manage the cuts in a responsible way and actually trying to prioritise the economy or looking after those who are most vulnerable, but I'm trusting that either to the Conservative government under direct rule or to the DUP and Sinn Féin. That's how I see things at present, where we can make a difference. At present, we don't have a place called opposition where we can go to. We have a place called not being in the executive and not having an influence over decisions. Because if we opt out of the executive, what happens next? We can maybe go and be critical of government, and people can feel better that there's that alternative voice. But we're not yet in a position to be an alternative government. Until we change the structures, that is not an option available to us. We will then proceed to the next election. Part of being a political party, it's not simply sitting on the sidelines providing commentary. It is you have a manifesto, you try to get as many votes as you can to deliver upon that manifesto, and that's what the Assembly currently gives us the opportunity.
You did it up to 2010.
The opportunity to do so. So if we can have that opportunity, you should take it. If we were to opt out and say we're going to leave the executive until the structures change, there's no guarantee the structures will change. We're leaving a situation where the DUP and Sinn Féin, in theory, may well control the executive. And people, quite rightly, in a couple of years' time, will say, you know what, you parties should get back into the executive and speak up for the other people of Northern Ireland rather than leaving to the DUP and Sinn Féin. So you need to be very, very careful here what you're actually asking us to do. You're asking to step into a situation where there's no structure for us to be what is the second part of being an opposition, being an alternative voice and trying to get back in power and actually influence things in line with what we believe.
Right. Straight yes or no. Will the Alliance Party support John McAllister's opposition bill?
Yes.
Right. Will the Green Party?
I think so.
Right.
Stephen's your friend.
Will Basil? Basil will. Alistair, will you support John's opposition bill?
Well, we'll look at the detail and we will be the intention would be to support it if possible.
Right. Danny?
I think the opportunity is there in the current political talks to bring forward changes, significant changes. If not, if that doesn't happen, then we'll look closely at John's bill to see what's worthy in it.
But it's being discussed in the talks and it's a real possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It is a live discussion.
Okay. All right. I hope that was useful. We covered a lot of ground there. Let's get some more comments, and the quicker the better. I'm going to start with the lady on the up towards the back there. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Brigitte. I'm actually a member of the Labour Party. And yes, we can't stand for elections, but we're here just to say we're here and we're also doing politics. My question is, however, about something else that is not come up yet, and that is, I mean, Northern Ireland has now quite a great number of people who have come here from other countries, like myself. I'm German, and I've been living here for a long time. And I find politics here just never included me. And that's why I joined the Labour Party, amongst other reasons. And that is one thing I feel. It's, you are, like, as a European at the moment, with all the discussions on immigration, and, of course, the increased racism, there's a disconnect between us and the politicians. So what I want to know is, what can you guys actually offer me as a European? What would you, well, how would you get us included? I mean, I know what we are doing, but I want to ask you that question.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much. There's a gentleman at the front who's had his hand up for a very long time. And do you want us to get the microphone, or are you going to...
Can
you
hear me?
I think we can hear you, if you shout. Yeah, yeah.
My name is Tony Wright, and I'm a very happily retired vice principal from London. I would like to try and get some agreement. I think that some of the lack of favour that people view the assembly as perceived waste of money, RPA and ESA and so on. What I would like you to answer is, why do we have to have 108 MLAs? Why do we have to have 10 ministries? And how would you go about cutting it, and what numbers would you come up with?
Watch The View tomorrow night. Stephen Walker's done a film on this. It's absolutely on the money. I mean, that's what the film is about, and that's what I think. Are you taking part in the studio discussion? So
no,
we are.
You're
in the film. Sorry, we may have a studio discussion off the back of it. 12 departments, actually. 12, the 10 departments, plus Justice, plus FM, DFM. So it's 12 altogether and 108.
It's clearly inflation.
Yeah. It's run away with itself completely. I'll get them to address that directly in a second or two. Terry, right. Let's start at the back and work our way down. Okay. Sure. Or you can just shout even.
I'll speak, actually, yeah. Callum Mulan, SDLP, by the way, just for clarification. And I'm interested in about the mechanism. I'm trying to combine also a couple of nerdy type of what is democracy. In fact, well, of course, what we have here, are we talking about representative democracy, which had to arise during the 18th, 19th, 20th centuries. But in the modern day, I was just wondering, in fact, should we be looking for another type of democracy? And it's changed every 4 or 5 years as the way representative democracy works. Does it need to be supplemented with other things? I give you an example. I'm interested in the panel, cross out, be interested in the reaction to this. And we've already referred to two things. First of all, a call for civic society's participation. But there's also been reference made to two points. And one is the European referendum, and also the Scottish referendum. So therefore, as a concept, and especially obviously in California and Switzerland, referenda happen fairly frequently, but based on criteria. Now, it seems to me, if you try to get to address some of the points about the functionality of the Assembly, never, I'm leaving aside the budget, the functionality of the Assembly, if you have a stipulation saying if you can't get agreement on a particular issue by a certain time, maybe that issue should go to a referenda along with some other things. Likewise, if you recall as well, the concept of civic society, but also if you remember Mr. Cameron called for, if it was 100,000, I think, people signed a petition in this big society, that should petition a kind of a debate or a referendum or whatever it is. So I wondered, is there scope in our Assembly for getting over the difficult issues that would affect non-Iron society if, in fact, the people themselves, that is all about democracy, did actually have a bigger say on those critical. I'll give you an example. I mean, I think everybody would agree, for instance, an example that some of the issues, there's a lot of harmony from the polls that we all agree on, but because the parties had different positions on it, it doesn't get anywhere. Whereas if they were guided or steered by the lead by the people, they might actually say, that's a good idea.
Might, of course, might make it worse. But, I mean, that's the argument against it, presumably, isn't it? That would make it even more complicated to make a decision.
Oh, sorry, one other last thing, by the way. Our party is, in terms of electoral pacts, our party, and I think has made the case for it as well, that Westminster elections and Northern Ireland should be by proportional representation. Therefore, you might actually get the sort of the middle ground that you wanted.
But you couldn't do that on its own because it would change. I mean, anyway, single member constituency, so that would be very complicated. Was it Tony? Yeah.
I want to ask a question about how we run our society. Last month, it was reported there are 200 sectarian murals in Northern Ireland at a minimum. The police said these are illegal, but we can't do anything about it because it would cause community upset. The House Executive said they are in single identity estates. What this means, a single identity estate is a state where I can't live if I'm in the wrong religion. And the one of the screens is that the legal organisations are putting up sectarian symbols to reinforce a separate society. And the view of the police and the housing executive is that nothing can be done about this, and no one challenges that. Are the parties here pleased, happy with that, or what would they do to change it?
Right, excellent. I will ask them. Thank you very much, Tony. There was another hand in front. No, quickly. Can we do this really quickly? Yeah.
Well, basically, we have 11 super councils now. We can use their electoral areas to return 5 MLAs, and that's more than adequate to run Stormont.
Right.
Because we're going to get duplication.
If we haven't already got duplication. All right, okay. Yeah. So it's the earlier point about numbers. Okay,
the other
perfect.
Point, I've heard nothing here to encourage people to run out tomorrow and vote. We need to hear something different.
Okay, we'll see if they can give us something to take away and encourage us. Gentleman with the white shirt, Alan in Belfast, and I'm going to the panel, and I'm going to go around these very quickly, folks, because we've got 8 minutes, okay?
Yeah. Sorry, my name's Conor Quinn. I'm also a member of the SDLP. Perhaps a little bit less ambitious than this gentleman here, but there might be some commonality around about a joint platform for political reform. You know, there are threads that come out around the civic forum, for example. You know, if every single party was talking about that and there was a momentum behind that, then we could maybe get somewhere. But, you know, the parties in the centre aren't, you're not coalescing around some ideas in the political reform agenda. It could, for example, be about, you know, the post-election process. That process that John referred to, very important negotiation of the programme for government, how that happens, how you work together on that, and whether if you don't get what you want, you tell the electorate in advance that then you're going into opposition. It's that process between election, the establishment of a programme for government, and then the establishment of a government, which is key, and you should be able to, in the centre ground, establish a process around that.
Okay, thank you. Alan?
Alan Mabin. If I follow on, this is neither of the things I was going to say. But, I mean, when Platform for Change started all those years ago, one of the things I thought might come out of it was that there would be policies that, in a sense, could be shared across middle ground parties, that there'd be things on education or things on welfare or things on housing, and that would be, if you like, blocks of policy that you could more or less agree on and kind of try and work into programme for government. And that's never really happened. And it's a real disappointment that hasn't happened. And it's a real disappointment that 108 MLAs sit, well, all but the ministers, kind of get to sit on committees, and yet we ended up, those committees scrutinise the budget of departments. So everybody on the platform, effectively, you have somebody who's on those committees scrutinising budgets, and yet we have streetlights kind of going out on the basis of the fact that there's a mid-year variation and that somehow somebody forgot that austerity had happened and it would hit us. And it doesn't really kind of put a lot of, my second point was that it doesn't really give us a lot of confidence in the MLAs and the parties we have at the moment on the basis that something so big is missed and the opportunity for actually doing good things together with joint policies is overlooked.
Okay, thank you. Can I land the plane here? It's not easy to cover all this ground in a relatively short period of time. I'm going to do my best. Can we just deal with these issues one by one, if you like? First of all, on the issue, and I mean in a sentence, okay? I should only work in a sentence. What do you say to Brigitte about including people who are not, let's say, from the indigenous population in Northern Ireland, people who have chosen to come and live here? Stephen, in a sentence, what does the Alliance Party do to include people like Brigitte, who's chosen to join the one party, isn't allowed to field candidates in our elections? And forgive me for saying that, it's hugely ironic. I know, Boyd, you'd like it not to be like that. I know you'd like it not to be like that, but that's the way it is. So, whilst Boyd isn't allowed to stand, what's your message to Brigitte?
More than happy to see the Labour Party standing in Northern Ireland and giving people more choice, even though it's more fragmentation. In terms of diversity, I would simply say Anna Lowe, local MLA for South Belfast, born in Hong Kong, and has flourished in terms of Northern Ireland politics, got the best ever result for us at a European election. We have members from all different parts of the world in the party, and we very much welcome that Northern Ireland is becoming a much more diverse place. But we need to have that type of discussion about how Northern Ireland interacts with Europe, and I appreciate the point that the moving question of our status within the European Union is a massive one with huge implications.
John, briefly?
I second Mark's point. I thought it a bizarre choice of party to join, the one that didn't stand. I mean, it is just about trying to engage, and parties do at times, like across the board, do at times try to engage with different groups and you know, minority groups. But it is, you know, I say hands up, we are not as a society particularly good at that, because we're and I think we're much better. You're probably looking for a much more normal politics on left-right debate on social issues and all of those things, and that's where we have to get politics to make you feel that you can come and are welcome to be part of that debate, rather than purely the constitutional question, which I assume you have very little interest in.
Okay. Claire?
First of all, I would say welcome. I know you've been here for a while, so I wouldn't even consider you a newcomer. You're a local, really. but I would love to see an awful lot more people coming to Northern Ireland too. I think that we need that in order to shift this bipolar notion that we have of identity here still. But with the Greens, we're also a European party. We've got the English and Welsh Greens, we've got the Irish Greens, we've got the Scottish Greens, but we've got every country in Europe covered there as well. We're also the biggest party and a single entity in the European Parliament too. So I think that feeds through with everything that we do here on a local level as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Johnny?
Yeah, I think it needs to be that we need to move towards a more normal politics, more left-right politics, as NI21 tried to do. Ironic, you might say that we fell down on the constitutional questions and started our crisis. But and what it is, that's what we're trying to do. You need parties that are invested in Northern Ireland. A lot of the debate about the constitutional question always comes up. It's people that want to see Northern Ireland not exist and be integrated into Ireland, or people that are very, very focused towards Great Britain. So it's being invested in the area of Northern Ireland, making it more appealing to people coming to Northern Ireland, making jobs better, getting better innovation. So, yeah, that's what you need. People focused on promoting Northern Ireland as an entity.
Okay. Alistair, briefly.
Well, very, very briefly, it depends, Brigitte, on what exactly you wanted to get involved in or what aspect of politics you want to be involved in. We have people from across the world. We have Russians, Ukrainians, Portuguese, some of them stood for candidates, Polish people as well, and even Australians. So we have a broad section of people. We're very interested in people coming in here. We're very keen to accommodate them. We're very keen to involve them. And in the broad Labour sense, we would be closely affiliated with the Social Democrats in Germany. So our door's open at any time.
Okay. Danny?
Yeah, you're very, very welcome. This is Northern Ireland and you're welcome to it.
I'm not sure that's what you meant to say, Danny.
And there are several interpretations of that, I think. Well, at least two. But sir, look, we do value, as a party that is pluralist and open and welcoming, we want to encourage that. And we also want to encourage your involvement and the involvement of everyone in the body politic. Because
right.
That's crucial.
Okay. I'm going to sweep back the other direction again, and again, I want quick answers for this.
I thought my answer was quick.
It was quick. It was quick. You win the prize, so I'm going to go to you next. 108 MLAs, yes, no, and if not, what would you cut it to? And 12 departments, yes, no. Where would you go with it? And it's raised by two people. So what's your position on that?
108 too many. I think government departments too many, so we need to... and it may well be that the current talks will yield that. What I do say...
Would you go to 90? Would you go to five a constituency?
Well, just the only rider that I put on this is that the reduction in numbers of MLAs will actually squeeze the centre ground. And that's not a popular measure thing to say, because it looks as if you're simply in favour of the status quo. I'm not. and the party's not, but be careful what you pray for.
Right, okay. Alistair?
Well, Danny has said some of it. Basically, the reason there was 108 MLAs in the beginning was to include smaller parties.
Yeah.
And some of the smaller parties that might be represented here might suffer severely in reducing that. And certainly even Danny's party, my own party, might even suffer as a result of the restriction. And just,
so would you keep it at 108?
Well, we believe that in time it needs to be reduced, but we feel like the opposition thing, it's not just time yet.
Right.
And quite simply, the to exclude the differences, to exclude people who can be individuals or whatever there, it's very important to do that, to continue to do that until we're stabilised, and we're not stable yet.
Right.
Excuse me, can I ask a subsidiary question?
Yeah.
Do you not have the confidence that the manifesto that you will put forward command the support of the people regardless of how many MLAs and MPs there are?
Look, we'll fight the election on whatever terms or whatever numbers there are. I've no fear in terms of a reduction. I'm simply saying that in present terms, the projections are that the larger parties benefit more initially.
Yes, I mean, I think all parties would lose out. I mean, it's not just the small parties that would lose. If you talk to Nicholas White, and I have talked to Nicholas White about it, the bigger parties would lose too, but proportionally they would lose less.
That's right.
But the smaller parties would be affected in a greater way.
You're talking about an opposition, and the smaller, the more you shrink it, the more you remove or squeeze the opposition as well.
Okay. Yeah, Trevor.
The SDLP and the Unionist Party were surely the biggest parties when they actually acted together in a way that showed a constructive way forward for people in Northern Ireland. And they lost that.
You mean in the run-up to the agreement?
Yes, but they actually ended up the biggest parties because they actually worked together and showed leadership to the people, and the people responded. Now, they lost that, and there's a variety of reasons that they lost that, but part of it was they stopped acting together. And unless they face up to that, then they're forever going to remain in the position that they're currently in. And that is just a comment.
Give the Senate majority a proper chance.
Arthur, I think you just need to set up your own party. I don't know. I don't know how you could see everybody around the table today. Well, I don't know if it's too many.
No threat to the extremists.
Yeah, but it's fine. But what would you? What? I mean, in all seriousness, I don't really want to go back. But in all seriousness, you couldn't get the parties to agree on anything.
They wouldn't. How can they expect any of us to agree about anything if the six of them, who are the leaders, can't agree? And it might just be that if they got their heads together, they might just be better together.
If there's such a demand for the middle ground, then why isn't Alliance the biggest party in Northern Ireland?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. Completely agree. Well, part of the answer is that half the people don't bother to vote. That's part of the problem. I mean, if voting was mandatory, I suspect, I don't know, and it's not necessarily my personal view, I'm not suggesting that for a minute, but if people were forced to vote as they are in some other countries, I mean, for example, Australia, I mean, you could well be the biggest party, but the problem is that an awful lot of people in the middle ground don't bother to vote.
Have Alliance but Belfast?
That's just, what?
Have I might win near in
Belfast. Alliance have offered me West Belfast.
And I think
right.
The example that you're showing there, I mean, is a very top-down approach to politics. I mean, we elect politicians to represent us and not the other way around. So it's about encouraging the 50% who don't vote to come and do that, you know. But I think what you're saying is that you want this other party to come to exist and then make it all better for you. There's the whole issue of accountability is missing from that picture, you know, and we need to make...
But Arthur, you might vote for it, but nobody else. I mean, other people might not vote for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, right. Let's deal with 108 MLAs in the 12 departments. Johnny.
Terry, you kind of took my point before I got a chance to say it, is that if you believe in what you're putting forward, if you believe it's right for Northern Ireland, then you have no worry on the reduction of MLAs. If your manifesto is strong enough, you can get elected in a five candidate.
So do you think in a 90-member assembly, Basil would hold his seat?
The thing is, as I said before, it's if you believe in what you're putting forward, then you have to believe that you will get elected. It really, it shouldn't matter. I know it will for smaller parties.
I'm not sure that those two things are necessarily connected. Just because you believe it doesn't mean it.
If you believe it's the right decision for Northern Ireland as a whole, as the majority of the whole, then you have to.
Well, that's one vote.
That is one vote for Northern Ireland as the majority of people in Northern Ireland. You put that forward, and then as politicians, we put our faith in the idea that people will vote for that.
Mm.
It's up to us to communicate it properly to the people we believe we're communicating to,
right,
so they vote for us.
Okay, so what is the NI21 position? Reduce the 108?
Yeah.
To?
There are many different options out there, I think.
What's your favourite option?
I think the 90 to start off with.
Right, okay. Which would be...
Around numbers, around political reform, but to a certain extent, we need to be cognizant of the fact we all voted for the Good Friday Agreement. There are certain things that are written into the Good Friday Agreement.
That's right.
It was 1972 to 108. 108 is actually written in there, in that document. It's in there. And that's just a small technicality.
But they are discussing it in the talks at the moment.
There has to be, at some stage, there needs to be recourse to the people for some of these substantial issues. Some of the substantial issues move to the opposition, which I'm generally sympathetic towards, but there is about recourse to the people in terms of re-endorsing the new arrangements, because just leaving it to the political parties clearly doesn't.
Well, okay, that's takes us back to the referenda point as well, doesn't it?
We do have a referenda every 5 years. Well, it's called a general election.
It's not a referendum, Danny, is it? Let's be honest. But I know what you mean. It's a big vote. Right, Claire, 108, 12.
We would be in favour of reduction as well.
To what?
I think that's an ongoing debate at the minute.
Right.
And as Conor says, it is written into the Good Friday Agreement too, so it's not one that we should be taking on our own. It's
even if Stephen might lose his seat?
Yeah, even if Stephen might lose his seat, well, hopefully we'll gain another couple as well, But it's over the greater good rather than the party good.
What about the departments, Claire, quickly?
Reduction.
Cut.
Way too top-heavy in governance in Northern Ireland.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
I actually would take Alistair and Danny's point that if you move at the minute, and say we did, whether through my bill or through the talks process, get an opposition, you could effectively kill that dead before it actually got off the ground. I would say it's too soon yet. If 90 seemed to be the figure that you were going for, I would want, I would rather stay at 6 per constituency and reduce the number of constituencies, because I think that does help smaller parts. I actually think the Assembly would be a poorer place without people like Stephen Agnew in it, because of that diversity of opinion. Or you could move to a 4-seat constituencies and use a list system, which might also encourage them as well.
Right, okay. And Stephen, briefly.
We would support going down to 90, and legislation at present allows us to very simply to make that choice if we wish. We would support considering going lower than that, but you would at that stage need to look at your constituencies, because if you go below 5, you do lose the prospect of proportionality.
Okay.
In terms of the departments, we would support going down to 8, but again, I would echo the point that people need to be very conscious of this. It is the right thing to do in terms of more lean, efficient government, but in terms of current voting patterns, it will entrench more power in the hands of the DUP and Sinn Féin. And while we can all go to the electorate and put forward our best case and hope that we will do better, we have to balance that with realism, that is the dominant political pattern and has been for election after election.
Okay.
And if we all assume that we would go forward and sweep everyone before us, we will all stand 108 people ourselves and expect that the electorate would back every single Alliance candidate, and probably the same for other parties. It doesn't happen. That's why we have to be realistic at the same time as be pushing change as fast as we can.
Okay, Tony Kennedy asked a very important question about sectarian murals and single identity estates, and I want a quick answer from each of you on that. What would you do to address that issue?
I fully concur with Tony's view and analysis of the issue. We need to reinforce the government departments and work in close conjunction with the police to take this issue head on and to essentially support those murals being painted out, and where murals are being painted in broad daylight, the authorities step in and challenge those who are doing it.
Okay.
They're actually committing an offence when they do so.
Danny?
It goes down to the central problem that whilst we have relative peace, we don't have reconciliation, and that's That's the issue. It will only be through reconciliation that we will be able to move more swiftly to remove symbols that are offensive to people. And I think that amongst all of the issues that confront either the executive or the assembly, that is the central one that is the most depressing of all. Sectarianism and bigotry is alive and well.
Alistair?
Well, surprise, surprise, I agree with Danny and a lot of what he said there. We cannot afford and should not afford and should not tolerate sectarian murals from wherever they come or whoever they represent. They're divisive, they're threatening, they're menacing, and they're basically telling people to go away, this isn't shared space. And I think Tony's question also mentioned the single identity estates. I believe in mixed estates. I believe for housing it should be mixed and people should be allowed to mix freely and by choice. But the problem is this, because of the sectarianism in our society, even if you had a mixed estate in the morning, it would over time drift or gravitate in one direction or another because people would feel insecure and people would up and leave. That has been the difficulty. Margaret Ritchie, as Minister for Social Development and Housing, made a number of initiatives around mixed estates. And while some of them have survived, there are difficulties in the estates. And therefore, you know, I have seen enough nastiness and sectarianism and the kids getting beaten up and things like that I would not want to be dictating that people have to be living in a space where they're threatened, and indeed people wouldn't live in a place where they're threatened. So that's the dilemma. It's not you, it's not me, it's not the people in this room. It's basically all it takes is one or two hoods to threaten people to unmix, very rapidly unmix in a state.
Okay. Johnny, briefly, if you would.
Yeah, I think there has to. You have to make a stand at one point to say that everybody is entitled to their views, but you're not entitled to exclude anybody from the community, and I think that has to be... That has to be shown across the board. So, again, you definitely should go in and deal with these situations. I think one of the things cropped up when Danielle was talking was this idea of a mixed housing and mixed community. There's something wrong with the language there, the way we're looking at it, because it sort of still entrenches that idea of two communities that have to mix together, and it still keeps that idea, the same idea of the two communities of the past involved.
Well, that was a question.
Claire?
Yeah, I think we have to start looking as well at the causes of sectarian graffiti and why our peace walls are getting longer and bigger and more since the peace process has started. And again, I think it goes down to a lot of people feeling threatened or feeling that their identity is under threat, that there's been a lack of leadership in bringing them along with the process, in including them as well. And there's a lot of power and control issues going on there too. So we need to deal with the root causes of that, and we need to get very real about why they're there. Mixed housing, I think there's been good developments actually in terms of social housing provision lately too. Instead of building these big massive estates, which I think was very common throughout the 70s, we're building smaller housing areas now, and I think most of them actually are for mixed accommodation, mixed living, mixed ability, lifelong living as well, you know, so outside just a Catholic and a Protestant living next door together, it's also a whole inclusion of older people, younger people, disabled people, everybody's in there, and I know that that's the social housing that I would live in as well. We can't knock down estates because that's an awful lot of people need rehoused, you know, and just spring up new ones. These are going to take an awful lot of time to redevelop, but I think what we can do an awful lot quicker, an awful lot faster and get great results with is integrate our schools.
John?
I mean, there's really most of the panel. Danny's right. This is the one issue almost of reconciliation that we haven't made any great inroads into. I mean, over the last year or more, there's been another peace wall went up in parts of it, in one part of Belfast. I mean, that's the sort of stuff we need to actually get down. Until you address the issues like flags, like parades, find resolutions to those types of things. Claire talked about the fear that people have that there's somehow the culture is being eroded or their identity is being eroded. Until we actually, even in political leaders, people start changing the language around that gives confidence that actually you're not being under attack, you're not your rights are not being diminished until people feel that or see that. And it's what I've referred to before, at times a spirit of generosity in both our politics, but spreading that out to people on mixed and shared housing. I agree with Claire's point, young, old, and I'd add in on socioeconomic grounds as well, that you get a much better sense of cohesion and mixing and education. That's why I've been passionate about shared education, that you can't respect different ethos, people from a faith that want a faith-based ethos in their education, but we can share it, we can achieve good things educationally, and we get societal benefit from that. But, I mean, Tony, entirely accept the point. That's 16 years after the agreement, we've probably gone back, not forward. It's now time we really need to stop reversing and move into the gear, and that, and you're back to a collective government response to that.
Okay, folks, I'm going to bring things to a conclusion, if you don't mind, at this point, and maybe our speakers will stick around for 5 or 10 minutes for a private word, but I'm mindful of the fact that Trevor asked me to stop by 9:30 at the latest, and it's now 9:45, and I have a young daughter waiting to watch I'm a Celebrity get me out of here with me, so I'm in big trouble, I can assure you. Maybe you're in a similar situation. On a serious note, look, thanks very much for your thoughts and your engagement. I hope you've found the response from the panellists positive, if not entirely in agreement with your worldview. But I appreciate them being here tonight to take part in the conversation. It's not necessarily easy just to square up what everybody thinks in a situation like this, so there are no easy answers. Trevor, do you want to have the final word?
Yeah, just a couple of words. Just
to finish. First of all, thank all of you coming here tonight. I think there's food for thought out of the comments that have been made tonight that we can all take away and maybe mull over and hopefully help us develop our own ideas about how to take things forward from here, because I think Alistair's right, civic society does have to step up to some extent and take on some of the weight that is on our politicians' shoulders, because they don't have all the answers and they know that themselves. So thank you all for coming out tonight. Can I just thank a few people? First of all, can I thank Mark, if you could show your hand. I really appreciate him coming along and chairing this tonight, and it's very good of him. I think to our politicians, they have had the courage to put themselves forward, and they have a mandate, and it does take a lot to stand in front of the electorate, and they have done so. And again, I'd like to thank them for engaging here tonight as well. To the Crescent Arts Centre, you know, it is a good venue for events like this, and I thank them for helping tonight and the guys on the sound and lighting system and for setting the whole thing up. It was very good of them. To the Platform for Change Committee, Eileen and Cahill up there and others that were involved in helping pull this together. And it's okay. And to Robin Wilson, who is our chair, I'd like to just pay a personal tribute to the work that Robin has put into Platform for Change over the years. If you go onto our website, you can see some of the papers that we have developed over the years and some of the ideas that are in there. And I think some of them are worth reading again, because they do provide some answers to some of the problems that have been raised even tonight. And finally, can I just leave you with a thought that Peter Taylor, in a recent documentary on the BBC, asked who won the war. And I tend to the view that we all lost in our war. But if anybody won the war, then it was those of us who actually want to live together, no matter what our view on the constitutional position is, to want to share this place in a constructive way and build a society in which ourselves and our children can feel is ours. And I think we won the war, because certainly those of the more extreme views, they're the ones that have changed their politics, not that group of people who said, we do not want peace, or we do not want violence. We want a peaceful and stable society which we can all enjoy. I think the challenge is who's going to win the peace. And certainly, personally, I feel I've taken a lot of hard decisions to allow the politics to develop here. And I think all of us in our society have taken a lot of hard decisions to allow our politics to develop and hopefully develop in a constructive way. We've ignored murder, for one example. And that's not easy. And it would be an awful shame if we don't actually develop a politics that brings out of the best in this beautiful part of the world that we share, in a people that we know are great people when you press the right buttons.
And so we certainly would encourage our politicians to continue in that journey of trying to find a way of practicing our politics that is constructive, that takes responsibility, not power, but responsibility, and actually brings out the best for ourselves and the future generations. And certainly we do not want a politics that simply repeats the mistakes of the past. So thank you all for being here tonight and for supporting this event.